and welcome to Euractiv's Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And I'm Natasha Foote.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food team.
So as you might have noticed, we did not make an appearance for the podcast last Friday. So we're going to kick this one off with a slight apology, also an explanation of why that didn't happen. So the reason is, I'm sure as everyone can probably guess, last week was this final cap down week. I'm sure you were all following very closely on our live blog. So we were following everything cap, all the twists and turns of what happened last week. And we decided to bring the podcast to you on Monday. I mean, I'm sure everyone else, as well as us, were completely exhausted on Friday afternoon, exhausted and a bit delirious. So maybe it's better to have a little bit of reflection, come back to it. And yeah, here we are.
Indeed. I mean, you started like we were hanging our head in shame. But actually, yeah, we actually needed a bit more time to reflect and
put everything together. Yeah, because it was a big week and there's so much that happened. So, you know, I think better to revisit.
And what happened, actually? So first of all, if you missed all
how could you miss?
Yeah, all the twists in the CAP trilogue week, you can actually find them out in our live blog.
Mm-hmm. You can go back and relive the moments from last week.
Indeed. Let's start from the end, actually. So it didn't work, the attempt to strike.
Spoiler. Spoiler alert.
The attempt to find a final compromise on all the three dossiers of the Common Agricultural Policy reform actually failed.
Went kaput.
Yeah. On Thursday night, there was the last compromise package from the council that was discussed by the parliament negotiators on Thursday night, and there was a counter proposal that actually wasn't quite welcomed by the council, the ministers, who prefer to postpone the negotiation.
Mm-hmm. But what was this proposal? You want to get into the nitty gritty of it? We're going to talk about the
The proposal was a bit. It's actually quite long because it involved 13 points.
The unlucky number. This is why.
We know for sure that the first three were actually, I mean, both parties were okay, were fine with the first three. One was that the first one was on the transfer between pillars. Mm. The other one is on the co-financing rates. So basically the co-financing rate is the amount of EU aid that goes in addition to the member state support. And the co-financing rates were basically the same of the co-financing rate approved in the European Council conclusion of July. So basically the conclusion that agreed on the next generation EU. So they basically approved the co-financing rates that were embedded in the next generation EU for the transitional period. I don't know if it makes sense.
It kind of sounds like you're speaking a foreign language. It does make sense to me because I was so in it, but a lot of cap jargon, shall I say.
So yeah, basically they agreed on the same co-financing rates of the transitional period. For instance, 80% for the outermost region and so on. And there was also a ring fencing for sectoral intervention on fruit and vegetables linked with climate and environmental objectives, which has been established at 15%. These are the only three things where they actually found a compromise during these 4 days, which is not
the super low promising. Hanging fruit, shall we say. And then it went downhill from there. Is what you're saying.
The fourth point is a bit more complicated.
Are you going to go through point by point?
No. I'm gonna
let's go straight to the drama. What's the main?
The drama was on ring fencing for the eco-schemes, which is the fifth point.
Right.
So basically, you probably remember that the council approved a mandate of 20% of ring fencing for EcoScheme. So basically, EcoScheme mm-hmm. are these agricultural, environmentally friendly agricultural practices.
Yeah.
And the ring fencing is basically how much money will be earmarked in the direct payments to these practices. So basically, it's the greening of direct payments. Mm-hmm. Direct payment, which is the first pillar of the Common Agricultural Policy, is the direct support to farmers. So the council mandate at the beginning of negotiations was of devoting 20% of direct payments to these green agricultural practices. Mm-hmm. The parliament wanted 30%, which was also the proposal from the commission. And so we know that actually the landing point will be somewhere in between 20% or 30%.
I remember back in October, we were like, well, that's 25 then.
That's,
you know, it seems so simple, doesn't it?
And indeed, the final proposal from the council was 25% for the whole period. So until 2027, when the program will end, the next CAP program.
But the problem came in the details, didn't it?
Yeah, indeed.
The devil is always in the details, they say, and it certainly was. Certainly was on this occasion.
They're right. Because the council, the ministers also proposed a floor of 18% with full flexibility to transfer unused funds above this floor to other decoupled direct payments, which is something that, again, it's CAP, the peak of CAP jargon. But for some MEPs and also for some NGOs, it appeared like, okay, this is basically a way to even, you know, downgrade the council proposal, which was initially at 20%, and now you basically allow an 18% of full flexibility.
And actually, I mean, it's worth pointing out, I mean, sometimes when you talk about these percentages, you know, 25 or 18 or 20 or whatever, it feels like just a few percentages here and there. But when you remember that we're dealing with a third of the EU budget, so, you know, 270 billion euros, you know, 7% actually translates to a huge amount of money, but also translates to a huge amount of impact on the ground. So I think that's always the important thing to, I think it's sometimes hard to conceptualize, you know, these different percentages. At least it is for me.
That's a lot, indeed.
It means a lot. Yeah, it really translates to a lot.
We're talking about the highest direct support to farmers probably in the world. Huh?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was basically the main thing.
Mm.
It wasn't actually the main thing because, again, even on social conditionality and on the trade aspects of the Common Agricultural Policy, there was some kind of... And the horizontal regulation on the Crisis Reserve Fund. But the point is that, again, it's basically the moment when the negotiation failed, because they lost some kind of trust. You know, it's basically the parliament started not to trust the council anymore, and they replied with a counter proposal, which was another provocation from the European Parliament after the provocation from the council, which was basically 22% and 23% of this floor, which was considered
kind of a step-by-step approach, like a staggered approach. Yeah, but it's true that, I mean, this floor, you know, as you said, it was seen as a provocation. It kind of just raised everyone's hackles, didn't it? And you know, talks pretty much went downhill from there, didn't it? Just disintegrated.
Indeed. It's that's what we heard from insiders, because of, unfortunately, these negotiations are not public, are behind closed doors.
This is where we come in.
Yeah, indeed.
Wink.
And so basically, if we have to find a moment or a topic where everything blew up, basically, it must be this one.
This is the gossip right here.
Yeah. And of course, another thing that actually it's interesting, and that it basically, of course, I mean, when this kind of negotiation fail, there's always this blame game thing. Mm-hmm. You know? So basically, who basically acted as a catalyst in not reaching a compromise. The Portuguese president and the ministers accused by the
widely accused. Actually, I mean, what was interesting, there was this moment, wasn't there, where it seemed that the parliament suddenly kind of united against a common enemy, against a common front. What's the phrase I'm looking for? United against a common enemy, against the council. You know, and I think it was actually pretty much across the board. MEPs were, you know, saying, placing the blame for this on the council, pretty much squarely on their shoulders.
Which is quite an achievement, because I mean, we know fragmented is the parliament, even from a political point of view. Of course, they're grouped in political groups. So, yeah,
but they were suddenly united. Which is quite interesting to watch and quite interesting moment.
Plus, there's also another, you know, not only an intergroup alliance, but also an intersector alliance, because we have also, you know, some clashes between the agriculture committee and the environment committee. Mm-hmm. And this time, no, they were together against this common enemy. Yeah, let's call it like this.
Yeah, there were a lot of other fingers pointing there at the same time, wasn't there? I mean, everyone was pointing at everyone. There were the agricultural commissioner, Janusz Wojciechowski, came under fire from all sides, from all different reasons as well, which was interesting to watch. I mean, I remember the chair of the European Parliament's Agri Committee, Norbert Linz, was saying in a press conference at the end of last week, that the commissioner didn't do enough and that they were going to talk about, you know, how the commission could have an expanded role in the coming weeks of negotiations, which is interesting. I'm not sure exactly what that means. He didn't specify what that would mean. But then on the other hand, we had the council saying it was too much interference and kind of criticizing the commissioner for being too close to the parliament on some points. And I suppose, you know, there's one argument that if everyone's unhappy in a compromise, you're probably doing something right. But I mean, of course, the commissioner has a huge challenge to kind of be this broker and try and strike the right balance. But yeah, there was a lot, it's safe to say there was a lot of criticisms for the kind of commissioner's role in these negotiations. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how going forward from here, you know, the kind of role that the commission takes as this broker and what they look to change or improve. And for his part, the commissioner, during the press conference last week, you know, he defended his position. He said he thought that, you know, the role of the commission was very much in line with what the commission wanted and what they want to achieve. And he also said that any kind of perceived closeness, shall we say, or, you know, being more close to the parliament was something that was kind of purely coincidental, just because the parliament mandate was closer to the original commission proposals. But he's definitely had a lot of criticism for his handling of it. So yeah,
even from farmers, from
it's true, actually. Yeah, I mean yeah, EU Farmers Association Copacajeca definitely did not hold back, shall we say, last week. Quite a strong criticism from them. They said in a statement on Friday that the failure to conclude the talks was foreseeable due to the weakness and poor understanding of the agricultural commissioner regarding the reality of farming in Europe. So, yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting, you know, there's all these different for, against, and, you know, different opinions. But I think what's clear is that the commission needs to kind of step up and be on their A game if there's any hope of brokering this deal in June.
Yeah, indeed. There's still hope. Otherwise, it would be something for in the pipeline of the forthcoming rotating EU presidency, which will be held by Slovenia. You know, some kind of time constraint, because I mean, we are in a transitional period when it comes to the implementation of the common agricultural policy in this EU budget program. We already entered the new program, the new 7-year financial program of the EU. They're going to try to strike a deal for the Agri-Fish Council mid-June.
The pressure's definitely on.
I don't see a lot of, I mean, of course, I mean, it's not the right thing to say after a failure like the one of next week. But I don't see a lot of problematic aspects besides the figures, you know.
You just think maybe tensions got raised in those moments. Yeah. You know what it's like. I mean, everyone was sleep deprived for like, we were sleep deprived for days. You know, and maybe they just needed a breather to then reflect and kind of move forward.
And also, I heard from sources in the council that they basically had, you know, timing problem in the sense that they had to take a flight back home on Friday. Yeah. So there wasn't, you know, the, how can I say, not freedom, but basically they weren't relaxed enough in terms of, clinching a deal.
Having enough room maybe.
So it was a bit of a surprise that failed, but not that much because, I mean, if they had kind of reached an agreement, at least on the eco-scheme ring fencing by Wednesday night, it would have been possible to reach an agreement on the final deal. And actually, the problem was the eco-scheme ring fencing. So
that's the kind of issue to watch, isn't it? The big one. I mean, as well as the asset test, conditionality, and but this is kind of the underlying. I think if you got the eco-schemes decided, the others might fall into place. You know, there's more closeness on the other issues, I would say. There is definitely a strong ambition from everyone to conclude these talks, though. I think that's safe to say. So, I mean, hopefully we'll see something in the next few. I mean, we've already used the final cap down hashtag twice now. So I think maybe third time's the charm.
This time for real.
Countdown. We can call it like the final cap down or something. I think it's too long for a hashtag, but the real final. Yeah. I mean, it's sad that the final cap, this hashtag was actually the penultimate cap down, which is definitely not as catchy.
Yeah, we bet on the wrong horse, but
yeah. Next time we use the hashtag, it has to be the actual final. So, no pressure, negotiators. You have to be on our hashtag.
But let's talk about something other than Carmichael policy, shall we? So,
don't even know how anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually 20 minutes that we. We spoke about this, so to offer a bit of
a reprieve from all the cap.
Let's say that to our listener, to our beloved listener, we have today a guest, a very valuable guest. She's from the Commission. She's Deputy Director General in charge of quality research and innovation at the DG Agri, which is the Commission Service for Agriculture, Natalie Soos van der Weever. So yes, Natalie, we're talking about one of your topics today, in particularly the promotion program. And of course, I mean, as part of the objectives of the Farm to Fork strategy, which is the new EU's ambition when it comes to the sustainability of the food system, so the Commission is undertaking a review of this promotion program for agricultural products, which is a program to promote products and farming methods that support European Green Deal objectives. So can you outline exactly what that entails and what kind of products will be in line for a boost?
So we are in the middle of the process for the revision of the promotion policy. And for the moment, we are also preparing all this revision with the preparation of an impact assessment with a certain number of events, and in particular, a public consultation, which is ongoing for the moment and with a deadline of the 3rd of June. And the idea, of course, it's to enhance the contribution. So the promotion policy will enhance the contribution to sustainable production and consumption, and also in line with the evolving diet. The idea is not to exclude a product as such, but to focus on the sustainable production of this product. So that is clearly mentioned in the Farm to Fork strategy from one side, and also now in other communication, in particular, for example, the beating cancer plan.
And there are several bones of contention with the promotional policy, and one of them is to do with the promotion of meat. So on the one hand, we have kind of environmental campaigners calling for an end to all promotion for meat that say that it's not in line with the Green Deal objectives. But on the other hand, we have agri stakeholders highlighting the need to promote sustainable meat. So can you outline where does the Commission kind of stand on this meat debate?
It's still with internal discussion, but this idea, what we mentioned already in this communication, the strategies, is that this evolution will include the promotion of more plant-based diet with less red and processed meat and more fruit and vegetables. For the meat sector, as highlighted in the Farm to Fork strategy, the review should focus on how the EU can use its promotion program to support the most sustainable, carbon-efficient methods of livestock production. So it's not a question of exclusion, it's a question of a little bit the angle of the promotion.
And, of course, on the same theme, there are some members of the European Parliament's Agriculture Committee who have recently criticized the plan, of course, for reduction for meat, arguing that it can risk pushing consumers toward imports of more unsustainable meat. Is this a real concern in your opinion? And how does the Commission propose to protect EU farmers in this case?
But the campaigns that promote the quality and sustainability feature of EU agri-food products, including meat, are eligible to benefit from the co-funding under the current promotion policy. So the Farm to Fork strategy already mentioned aims to reward those farmers and other operators in the food chain who have already undergone the transition to sustainable practices and enable the transition for the others and create additional opportunities for their business. The new promotion policy should become a really powerful tool to promote sustainably produced European food. So the promotion policy can help increase awareness of the high standards and sustainable attribute of the EU products and nudge consumers towards choosing EU agri-food products, including meat, both in the internal market but also in promising non-EU markets.
And turning now to organic produce, so the promotional policy also plays a large part in the promotion of organic. I'm wondering, how far do you see this going to helping to achieve the aims of the Farm to Fork strategy that has this rather ambitious target of 25% of land to be farmed organically by 2030? And a lot of stakeholders have raised concerns about this. So how do you see the role of promotional policy in helping to achieve this aim?
Going beyond mere awareness raising, the promotion policy is critical to help achieve the ambitious targets outlined in the EU Farm to Fork and also in the biodiversity strategy, which include, as you mentioned, reaching at least a quarter of agricultural land under organic farming management by 2030. As part of the demand-driven approach taken by the Action Plan on the Development of Organic Production recently adopted by the Commission in March, promotion campaigns play an important role in stimulating consumer demand for organic products of EU origin within the Union but also in the non-EU markets. So in turn, increased consumer demand will help driving the surge in agricultural land under organic management. So that's why in the promotion policy annual work program for this year, for 2021, we have already allocated 49 million to co-fund promotion of organic product of EU origin. And this is really an unprecedented ring-fenced financial envelope that will make a significant contribution towards reaching the goals of the Farm to Fork strategy. And in addition, the Commission in its action plan has also for the following years commit to continue to secure this ambitious budget in the EU promotion policy for boosting the consumption of organic product. And now we are waiting a little bit for the result of the call for this year. And we hope that that will be a very good result for this promotion of organic product.
And a very last question. I'm coming back to the MEP's concern, because back in February, members of the same committee, so the agricultural committee, raised concerns that the commission is somehow forging ahead with its agenda on promotion policy without taking into account the views of the parliament. So what would you say to that?
If I understand you correctly, you are referring to the fact that we are still awaiting the EP's report on the farm to fork strategy and the recommendations contained therein regarding the review of promotion policy. So I would like to make a clear distinction between two things. From one side, we have the annual work program for 2021, which was drawn up to support the priorities of the Green Deal, but fully respecting current regulatory framework. And from the other side, the review of the promotion policy, which is currently ongoing, and that may lead to proposal for a new regulatory framework. And so the Commission launched the review of the promotion policy earlier this year, as already mentioned at the beginning of this interview, but with the publication of a roadmap and the launch of a public consultation, which is open until 23 of June. And we are eager to see the report of the European Parliament on the farm to fork strategy, and we naturally take into account as we review the promotion policy. So we are really keen to receive as much input as possible to the review process through this public consultation. And also to exchange of view, we have regularly with the European Parliament, and in particular with the Comagri. So to discuss the options for the reviewing of the policy, we are also, as already mentioned, organizing an online conference which will be open to all interested parties on the 12th and the 13th of July, where we will also present the first result of this open consultation, and we hope to have an important participation of the MEPs.
And that's all from us this week. And this week, like every week, the Euractiv Agri-Food podcast was produced by Euractiv's Agri-Food news team. That's Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foote, with the support of our podcast producer, Evie Chiori. And you can also find this podcast on all major streaming platforms, including Amazon, Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher.
And be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss the latest agriculture news from the EU. I'm Gerardo Fortuna. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.